Baseball at the Box, a surprise taking place in Game 1. Seawolves from Stony Brook won't catch the Tigers by surprise. They may beat them, but they're not going to surprise LSU. The Tigers are ready. Mississippi State facing a hurdle. The Southern Jags surprising them in Starkville. Did Toronto surprise the Golden State Warriors? Maybe so. Pascal Siakam, the game of his life as the Raptors win Game 1. And if you like the beer and the wine, you're going to love Southeastern Conference sports now more so than ever. All of this and more today, Friday, May 31st, 2019.
Two-one pitch.
Line to left field. That's a base hit. That's a game winner. For the fourth time on the homestand, the Rockies with a walk-off win. Daniel Murphy lining a pitch to left. And the Rockies sweep the Diamondbacks.
Siakam hustles it up the court. Green, corner three, good. Down the bottom of the well for Danny Green. Largest lead of the game for Toronto at 100-88. Siakam backs in near side, left wing. Kick up top to Lowry. Back to Siakam. Drives, hook shot in the lane. Good. Banked it up and in. 96-87 Toronto. 30 for Siakam.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday. Yes, indeed. How are you, Acadiana, and around the world as you're listening to us in whatever form or fashion that you are? This is the Jordy Helfberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. My main man, producer extraordinaire, CD in the 237 Roof Master Control Studios. He's spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons. And we got a busy day for you. And the biggest story coming out today is that the SEC voted during its spring meetings today to lift the ban on selling alcoholic beverages in public areas at its athletic events. How about that? So here's kind of the policy, the rules for it in a nutshell. It's beer and wine only. The sales will end in Tiger Stadium and around the SEC at the end of the third quarter. Men's basketball, they'll cease selling beer and wine at the second half, the 12-minute timeout. So you're going to have 8 minutes into the second half before you got to shut it down. Women's basketball, the end of the third quarter. Baseball, the end of the top of the seventh. Softball, the end of the top of the fifth. Other sports, no later than when 75% of the event time has been completed. It's another chance for revenue. So, effective August 1st, beer and wine in Tiger Stadium, in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, Alec Box Stadium, Skip Berkman Field, and all the other venues that you like. Is this going to increase attendance? I don't think so. Is it going to make people stay longer? I don't think so. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The only thing that's going to do that, the only thing, is to bring better teams into your venues. Make the game special. Make it special. And then you got a shot. But there you have it. Baseball taking place as we speak. The NCAA tournament underway. Game one, the Baton Rouge Regional. Top of the fifth. Two outs. Southern Miss has really taken it to Arizona State. Southern Miss 7, Arizona State 1. Mississippi State has come back now in the bottom of the fifth in their regional in Starkville. Southern University from Baton Rouge was leading 4-1. It is now 4-4. So the Jaguars putting up a fight, but it looks like Mississippi State is going to be taking control. We'll have a lot on these baseball games, including today we will preview the Baton Rouge Regional. Our guest list includes former NCAA champion, two-time World Series champion Ryan Terrio coming up at around 2:15. Eddie Yarnell will represent the pitching. He was an integral part of College World Series teams for LSU and pitched in the big leagues specifically for the New York Yankees. He'll come on board today at around 2:32. Meanwhile, Paul Maneri, we heard in the opening, talking about pitching Landon Marceau and how he's going with his best pitcher in the biggest game of the year because it's the opening of the tournament. This team, Paul was asked about, you know, there was that turning point when Duplantis hit the three-run homer to win on the road in Arkansas, game three. He was asked on when this team, cut number eight, when his team got a lot more loose and ready to go.
I think that last game against Arkansas was huge. You know, of course, that ended that little losing streak you're talking about. But, you know, the night before against Arkansas, game two, I mean, game one was bad. You know, it was just a bad game. We fell behind early. We're going up against one of the best pitchers in the league. You know, you're down 6-0 or something, 6-1. Somebody hit a home run early for us, Cabrera maybe. I think so. I don't know. We were down, but what looked like an insurmountable, you know, deficit against that caliber of pitcher. So I went to a, you know, young kid to, you know, get him the experience and save the rest of our pen, and he just, you know, had a tough night. And the game got out of hand, and then the rest of our team just stopped playing hard, and I was really upset with them after that game. And I told him after that game, look, it's winning and losing is one thing, but how you play the game and how you represent your school and your team is a whole nother thing. And whether we win or lose tomorrow night, we're going to go out there and we're going to play the game the right way. And that's, you know, I didn't threaten them, but they knew what the message was.
The message was, what was the message that you gave your starting pitcher, freshman Landon Marceau?
Well, I told him that if I didn't think he could do this, then I wouldn't have made this assignment. But I told him he's not, the team he's going to face is not going to be any better than the teams he's pitched against over the last several weeks. You pitched against, you know, the best teams in the SEC. So you should not be nervous about that at all. That's not meant as a disrespect to Stony Brook. It's just that when you're playing in the SEC, you've faced all the great teams. So you can't feel like, oh, man, I wonder if I'm good enough to beat these guys. You are good enough. You've proved you're good enough. And, you know, we're going to have people in the stands, but we have people in the stands every game. And you just got to forget. It's just a baseball game. It's not finding cures for cancer. It's a baseball game. So just go out and have fun and let it rip and let your talent speak for itself.
Right now, again, Southern Miss leading Arizona State 7-1. Lots of long ball hitters coming this weekend. The fans should really enjoy it. And Paul Maneri, cut number three, talked about the sluggers coming to the ballpark.
Well, there's three hitters in this tournament that have hit 20-plus home runs. It's going to be warm, and probably the ball is going to be jumping in the box, you know. It's a little bit scary, to be honest with you. I coached Spencer Torkelson last summer with the USA team, who plays for Arizona State, and I coached Matt Wallner from Southern Miss as well. And those guys have huge power. Now, I haven't coached Bishop, and he's outdone Torkelson this year, not by much, but a little bit. So, you know, those guys are powerfully, they're teams that are built around power, and it's a little bit scary. You know, so we're going to have to make great pitches, and we're going to have good pitchers that can make good pitches against them, whichever team we end up facing in game two. I don't know who that will be, and I don't know if it'll be in the winner's bracket or the loser's bracket. We got a big game ahead of us. So I'm trying not to spend too much time thinking about Arizona State or Southern Miss just because I know we have a tremendous challenge in game one with Stony Brook.
It certainly looks like right now in the top of the fifth, two outs, bases loaded, Southern Miss with a 7-1 lead. They're at the plate. Make it now 9-1 Southern Miss over Arizona State. And Mississippi State has come up with four runs in the bottom of the fifth to lead Southern 6-4. More coverage of the Baton Rouge Regional. Ryan Terrio, the former Tiger and big leaguer, joins us next here on your source for LSU Sports, 103.7 The Game.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Just, you know, I mean, I know they're not the same, they don't have the same players that they had back in 2012, but, you know, I watched their show when they saw the assignment, and, you know, they all dressed the same, they all jumped out of their seats and cheered. I mean, they're a very disciplined, enthusiastic, high-energy team, and I have a lot of experience of coaching against those kinds of kids. I hate to stereotype, but when I coached at Notre Dame and we played in the Big East Conference, we played against Rutgers and Seton Hall and St. John's, and I know the passion that those kids play with, and you know, they're hard nosed, and you know, they, when you play on lousy fields and lousy weather, and you know, all the things that you have going against you, it toughens you up a lot, and have all the respect in the world. If 2012 had never happened with them, I'd still have the same attitude about them. But of course, you know, the fact that they came here years ago and had success, that has trickled, I'm sure, to the 19 team, which gives them confidence coming here. And I think the worst thing in the world we can do is look beyond our first game. And that, I can assure you, that's not going to happen. They might beat us. It's not going to be because we overlooked them. I can assure you of that.
Paul Mainieri, as he addressed the media, giving the lowdown on the Stony Brook Seawolves tonight at 6 o'clock. LSU will try to erase those demons from 2012. With that in mind, thought I'd bring in a guy that's won at every level, a national championship in college, two World Series in the big leagues, and he does a tremendous job on the radio and coaching kids. He's here, he's there, he's everywhere. Mr. Ryan Terrio, kind enough to join us. Ryan, good afternoon, my friend. When I mention regional time, what memories does that conjure up for you? Ryan, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Now I can hear you, buddy. Yeah. Well, welcome.
I heard the question and I had a great answer, and it messed me up.
well, relive and give me that great answer.
School's out, right? I mean, this is the closest these guys can get to professional baseball while they're in college still. You know, you've got one thing you're focusing on and one thing only, and that's playing baseball. You can sleep in. You know, it's win or go home type scenario. This is the fun time, and this is why you play college baseball. And for a lot of the guys, the freshmen, they've never experienced this. They're having the time of their lives, I can tell you right now.
Do you ever get nervous at this point in time of the year?
No. I mean, I don't think it's a nerves thing, man. It's an excitement. It really is. You've clinched a goal, and that's playing in the postseason.
Right.
You know, being a Tiger, you have a lot of confidence because Alec Box Stadium just presents so many obstacles for the opponent, you know, and we know that as players. And so you're in your home stadium, and now I wouldn't say nerves at all. I would say this is fun. I mean, we always tell the kids, you know, it's supposed to be a game and you're supposed to have fun. Well, right now, this is the fun time for sure.
Ryan Terrio, kind enough to join us, LSU versus Stony Brook this afternoon, early evening, 6 o'clock. Were you surprised when Paul Mainieri gave the ball to his freshman, Landon Marceau, and your thoughts about it after the fact?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I thought that Walker would be the guy.
Me too.
You know, just looking at the rotation and the way everything's set up and all that. But, you know, I said this a few times. You know, it wouldn't surprise me, it wouldn't shock me if Marceau got the ball or if Henry got the ball. I really felt like if it was either one of those guys, it would be Henry. But I understand the reasoning. Like, you want to get off on a good foot. You want to make sure that first game goes well. And giving the ball to Landon Marceau, who's the hottest pitcher right now, and getting that first victory, I think, is important.
Right. It seems like at the ideal time, this is about as healthy as this LSU baseball team has been all year long. We've talked about it before. We're just almost to the point where we're seeing the whole stable put together.
Yeah, the guys are getting healthy. I think more importantly than that, you're seeing some players get hot at the right time. You're seeing Brant Broussard swing the bat like he's capable of. His kid's been playing great. He really put the team on his back as a senior in the SEC tournament, went out there, got it done, played wonderful. You're seeing Saul Garza do the same. I mean, listen, he's probably the hottest hitter in the country right now. He was, a month ago, was hitting 180-something, 184. Right now he's hitting 290. Everybody's clicking on all cylinders. This is the time you want all that to happen.
Broussard goes from a 33-ounce bat to a 32, and all of a sudden he's hitting 400. Is it just the bat speed? Is that what it's all about?
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of that's mental too, man. Hitting is such a mental thing and a mental skill. When you feel as if you have some sort of edge, and you know this, Jordy, you've been around Skip a lot. Like, a great manager would almost trick you into thinking you had some sort of edge. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Sean or one of the hitting coaches went in there and said, hey, man, if you do this, you just go down an ounce, man, your results are going to be much different, where in reality it probably doesn't make that much of a difference. But his confidence level when he gets in the box all of a sudden went from, not so great to, man, I've got an edge on this pitcher. And that means a lot.
Ryan Terrio, kind enough to join us. LSU versus Stony Brook. Everybody says this is the so-called experts out there that do this college baseball stuff for a living call this regional, if not the toughest, certainly one of the top two or three toughest regionals in the country. What makes it so tough?
Well, you've got a couple teams. You've got a couple teams that that can play. And Southern Miss, I believe, is a team that's on the rise. They're good right now, close to being great. There's a great recruiting class I know that they have coming in. Shortstop that I've been around forever, Dustin Dickerson, is a commit over at Southern Miss. I wish we could have got him down here to Baton Rouge, but his dad, Bobby, is the third base coach for the Phillies, just a hell of a player. Arizona State's got two hitters with 20-plus homers, although those numbers can be skewed a bit. I mean, the altitude and the lightness of the air out there really helps that ball fly. So I don't buy into those, but they do have two guys that can really swing the bat. And then you have Stony Brook, who's got some history down there. These guys are coming in with some confidence, and you know they're going to play hard. So I don't think there's one team, that you can just say, oh, we can win this one, where you look at a lot of the other regionals, they have those guys.
Right. I understand. Starkville, for instance, is one of them. I'd be shocked if they don't advance to the Super Regional. As a hitter, we keep hearing about at this time of the year at the box, the ball really jumps. It really gets out of there. You got to be careful with your approach, right? You can't be swinging for the fences.
No, I mean, it's has a lot to do with the heat and with the wind and the way that thing shifts throughout the year and all that stuff. No, you don't ever want to go up there and try to drive the ball over the fence. But aggressive hacks, I think kind of play into that. And also, you've got time to prepare for these teams where, in the middle of the season, you kind of get caught up in the daily grind of the season. All right. And you really don't focus on one team. Now, similar to professional baseball, where you get in the playoffs, man, and the hitters prepare so much more for the pitchers, and never advantage hitter, but the tides kind of turn just a touch.
If you had a chance to talk to the team, if Paul said, Ryan, address the team, you've been here before, you've done that, what kind of advice would you give them as they get ready to get to the fun part of the journey?
Well, in the postseason, and this is really in any game, You don't want to change anything, but really the small things are magnified in the postseason.
Yeah.
Just like in the Final Four or the Elite Eight in basketball, where, one turnover you know, a poorly executed offensive inbounds play, whatever, can really turn the tides of the game. It's the same thing in baseball. And in order to guard against that, guys just have to do what they're supposed to do. You know, meaning like whatever your role is on the team, take a one leadoff guy or two hole hitter. Like, don't try to hit homers. Just get on base. Be who you are. You know, pitchers that are asked to get one or two outs. I don't need you to go out there and throw four scoreless innings. Just go get these two or three guys out. And I believe that in the postseason, the teams that can do that are the ones that end up having success.
I've always been a believer in, like you said, do your job, do what you do,
yeah,
and put the onus on the other team and put the pressure on them. And sometimes that pressure bursts the pipe. The way LSU beat Auburn in the SEC tournament. Auburn beat themselves.
Just to know thyself, right? Just look in the mirror, know who you are, and be that guy. You know, don't try to be somebody you're not. And you know, the guys that put these teams together, Jordy, you know, Nolan Cain and Paul and all these guys that recruit, they have a plan. And when you see the teams that have success, that plan comes together, and guys do what they're supposed to do and what they're asked to do. You know, that would be my message. Just be you, man. Look in the mirror. And then remember, literally, it could be your last at bat of the season or the last pitch you throw this season. So take it personal.
Man, I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you're a very, very busy man. Thank you so much. And if LSU is successful this weekend, I'd love to get you on next weekend to talk about a super regional. How about that?
My pleasure, buddy. Anytime. Thank you.
All right, man. You're the best. Ryan Terrio, kind enough to join us again. As we've said all week long, LSU versus Stony Brook, game one for the Tigers, game two of today, and we'll have the pregame show at 5:30, first pitch at 6 o'clock. When we return, we got a hitter in Ryan Terrio. We'll get a picture. Eddie Yarnell joins us. He knows a thing or two about regionals and College World Series play as well. We continue our coverage of the Baton Rouge Regional here on Acadiana's number one sports station and your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game. This is the Jordy Helpert.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helpert Show. Live and local, 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. Man, it's just been a crazy, crazy first game in the Baton Rouge Regional as Southern Miss has blown the doors open against Arizona State. Now, top of the sixth inning, Southern Miss at the plate leading 12-1. Former LSU pitcher, All-American, College World Series participant, big leaguer, Eddie Yarnell, kind enough to join us, friend of the program. It's been a while, Eddie. Man, I appreciate the time, my friend. How are you?
For sure, Jordy. Yeah, it's been a minute, man. Everything's great over here, man. Just
awesome.
Left the park.
Awesome. Is the ball flying? I mean, Southern Miss. I think they're the team that made this regional so tough, being a 3-seed. They very easily could be a 2-seed, and they're, as evidenced by today, for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, no, ball's not really flying. I mean, look, their nine-hole guy, you know, hits a homer. So it's one of those deals where, you know, it's that time of year, atmosphere-wise. You can't let the big stage hinder how you kind of play the game and do what you do. And they're a scrappy bunch, man. I was impressed with their arm. The Shepherd kid that came out on the mound for Southern Miss really set the tone. I mean, that was 95, 97.
Wow.
So, but, yeah, I was kind of surprised. You know, Arizona State had the big boppers, but, you know, a lot of times good pitching can quell that.
That's why I wanted to bring you on board. Were you surprised when Paul Maneri opted for the freshman Landon Marceau to get the start today? I thought, in all honesty, maybe you want to go with a guy that's kind of been in postseason play before. I thought maybe Eric Walker would get the nod. But, hey, I'm not judging, but were you surprised with the starter?
I mean, a little bit. Look, I mean, now this time of year, you know, there's elite arms everywhere. I mean, like I said, Southern Miss and even Arizona State's got a day show that they were, you know, got the good velocity and can pitch. We, you know, we've been kind of searching for a guy to step up, and I think this latter part of the last couple weeks of the season, we've had some relievers step up. Marceau's kind of found the groove. Walker's, you know, done a nice job as he does. He goes out and competes and pitches well, but I see what you're saying. You know, Walker maybe to a lot of people is more of a safer kind of bet. You kind of know what you're getting with him, right? Marceau maybe a little bit of a wild card, but hey, you need all of the guys anyway, so it's time for your elite guys to step up and do what they need to do.
Eddie Arnold, kind enough to join us, part of the 1996 College World Series championship team, drafted by the New York Mets in the third round of the 96 Major League Baseball draft. He's played for the Yankees as well, and my goodness gracious, when I mentioned regional play, back then there was no such thing as a super regional. You had to go through a whole bunch of teams at your regional just to get through, to get to the College World Series. What kind of memories do you have of that time of your life?
Yeah, that's correct, Jordan. I mean, we had the eight regional sites, no national season. There's six teams in each regional, so there's 48. Mm-hmm. A little bit deeper, right? We had a little bit, few more games to get through. But, man, just the atmosphere, like I said, the excitement of it all, getting out there, getting to put the uniform on in front of, back then 7,000-8,000 probably was the most the old box could hold.
Right. Man,
exciting time. I mean, really, like I said, you just had to really get, as tough as it was, 18 to 21, 22-year-old guys, to get that emotion under control so that mm-hmm. the atmosphere and all that you're saying doesn't hinder the performance. And usually, two things usually happen is what Coach Burnham used to tell us. Look, the other team's either going to be in awe and starstruck in terms of the atmosphere and everything, and they're going to struggle, or they're going to go out there and get super amped up like a heavyweight boxer the first two rounds that we have right. to kind of sustain that early onslaught. And I think we've been part of both of those. And I think if you just play your game and know as an individual what you do well and as a team, and you don't stray from it, I mean, I think LSU will be fine.
Harvey Edward Yarnell, kind enough to join us. How about that for research? Yes, indeed. From Lima,
wow.
Pennsylvania. Wow. You've come a long way.
You're pulling it all out on me.
I'm not going to call you Harvey. I just can't do that, my friend. I cannot do that. Family name? Where did Harvey come from?
Yeah, I'm a third, man. So that's a family name that's been handed down. But I did not carry that on with my son. My son is Braden, so put a stop to it there.
There you go. There you go. I talked to Ryan Terrio just a few minutes before we got you on board, and I brought this up to him, and I'm going to bring it to you as well. Man, it's the old adage, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And this LSU baseball team has been through the ringer. They've had more injuries than I can ever recall. But it seems like for the first time all season long, they're about as healthy as they can possibly be. And it couldn't come at a better time.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Look, I still think, the arm situation, there's a couple, Hill and, a few other guys that Cole Henry's right. getting back now. I think that is something that, we're missing those guys because they were super, important to the program and missed. And I think that was part of the struggles. But, hey, it's short bursts. This is a short tournament now. I mean, we got this one, the Super, and in Omaha, I think, you win five and you're in Omaha, right? So
that's right.
We don't need 20, 30-game stretch here. We need a short burst of guys really – fine focusing on every pitch, every at bat, every inning, every play. And I mean, we have just as good of a chance as anybody else. I mean, there's no slackers, like I said, in the field of 64. I think someone was telling me, I talked to Coach King, Nolan King, today earlier, and he said, I think this is the first time four teams from a regional, and they've all been to Omaha in the last 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, kind of yeah. crazy because, obviously Stony Brook went. The only one I don't remember is Southern Miss when they went last. Obviously Arizona State has been a national power over the, last 20, 30 years. So,
right.
And the pundits have ranked them as one of the toughest regional, if not the toughest regional out of the 16. So, but hey, you gotta win. You got to beat them anyway. So whether you beat them now or later, right?
Yeah, Eddie Yarnell, kind enough to join us. And I'm kind of intrigued by what you said about it. You win five games, you get to Omaha, and so it's short bursts. With that in mind, You've got Marceau, you've got Henry, you've got Walker, you've got Vetmeyer is back. Hess seems to have settled in a little bit. And Fontenot and Peterson, yeah. They got a lot of pitchers. So what do you think the approach is here? Get me through the fifth inning and then we'll get you out, or how does that work?
See, Jordy, I know I like you, man. You think like a pitcher a little bit.
Yeah.
And I literally was talking to Sean Ochinco about this with Sedan. You kind of figured out the back end pretty good, I mean, arm-wise. And to me, if you have eight arms, okay, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be traditional, like most LSU teams that won, you had your aces, right? You had
right.
your Albert, O.J. Betlaxton, Mike Soraka, you know, Brian Tallett.
Throw your name in there too, buddy. Throw your name in there.
Lewis Bowman, Anthony Renato, okay, myself somewhat. And then they don't have that guy, but that's okay. And that's what I was telling him. I said, if you can just get three, four innings out of that guy, whoever it is,
mm-hmm.
and if he does well, keep it. But then now you can unload that one. Now you can go Hess, Peterson, Beck, even Hilliard if it's, you know. So Fontenot. You know, I would keep Hess, Fontenot, those guys in the back end a little bit.
Right.
Peterson. But, I mean, you've got all these arms that you can just, and you don't have to overwork them. You can throw them on an inning, two innings. So if we can figure out the first part of the 3-4 innings and get us into a lead, I think we kind of work backwards, almost like, you know, the Yankees can do when they have Chapman and Betances and those guys healthy. So mm-hmm. that's a big weapon, I think. Those are going to be big weapons in the postseason.
Eddie, it hadn't been brought up often lately. I brought it up before the season started. Man, there's no lefties on this pitching staff, and that worries me. It always has.
That baffles me a little bit. I mean, look, you know, it's not like we can't go out and get them or there's not any out there. Plus, you know, I mean, us lefties, we're a little bit different personality. You know,
yeah,
keep things
sure.
a little bit looser, maybe a little more. So you need that balance, right, a little bit. But it is what it is. I mean, there's nothing that you can do about it at this point. You just have to mix and match, you know, right-handed guys differently, I guess, with the
yeah.
left-handed hitters. But, yeah, I don't know what happened in terms of, you know, not having at least one or two lefties in the pen anyway. But, hey, you go with what you have. And,
that's
and,
right. It's
know.
Been all year that way. Yeah, it's been all they, year
they,
that way.
Battled,
so.
And I'll tell you, the team's battled through a lot, and they've stuck together. They're a pretty close group, it seems uh-huh. like. And that's going to play, too. I mean, you have to rely on each other, and it's going to be exciting to see how they do.
Garza's really come around behind the plate with the bat. Broussard went down to, you know, from a 33-incher to a 32-inch bat. He's swinging through. He was great in the SEC tournament. I'm curious, as a pitcher, Cole Henry got back from, you know, the injured list. He makes his return in the SEC tournament. Didn't last very long, but it seems like everybody felt pretty good about his performance. What say you?
Yeah, man. I mean, he had, you know, the numbers didn't look great in the tourney. He gave up, you know, that one inning was kind of funky. There was a catcher's interference and a couple other kind of weird things. But, man, stuff-wise, Jordy, he's got a riding four-seamer, a nasty two-seam sinker. He knows how to use a breaking ball that's, you know, a 12-6 late action guy and a changeup. So I think he just has to learn himself how to, you know, pitch and use his stuff in the right situations and make the pitches win. And that comes with experience, but I'm going to tell you what, there ain't nothing to say that he doesn't get on a roll and,
yeah.
you know, reel off three or four really outstanding starts here. I mean, now he's limited a little bit because he's just coming back. But, I mean, I would think, you know, he got his 40 or so. I mean, he could be 75 next outing. And then once you reach that number, to me, 70, now you're pretty much good to go. Obviously
gotcha.
Not up to the 120s, but now once you get to 75, you can go to that 100. So
okay.
he could be a guy that could come in and sustain and get you, like we're talking about, that ace-type
yeah.
6-7 inning outing
yeah.
where can totally shut down an offense,
that's
100%.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Take me back. The old box, which I still miss. I know I love the new amenities and all that stuff, but the quaintness – the tight factor, that was an imposing place to play. You get the ball from Skip, you're going to the mound to start the regional off. I got to believe the butterflies were there, the excitement, the adrenaline. Take me back to what that was like.
Yeah, Queens putting it nicely. I mean, it was loud. You know, you had people in the ropes. You know, they were 20, 30 feet from home plate.
Yes, that's right.
So it was very loud. And you remember over third base, you had a little Tiger Terrace, but they had all that there where you were literally, as fans, were right there. So a lot of intimidation in terms of these teams coming in that didn't have a lot of fans and weren't used to that. But, man, the one thing 96 stuck out, I started the first game of the regional, and we had just played pretty poorly in the NCC tourney. Well, that was the first time ever that we wore gold jerseys.
Oh.
And we wore them every game that postseason. So that's where the championship goal kind of started. I'll never forget, we had left the squad room, had our meeting there at the old box. And as we're coming out, Coach Canterbury, he's there with a box, and he's holding these jerseys up pretty proud. And I'm thinking to myself, God, these things are awful. You know, for them to go, but hey, let's go with it. And sure enough, we reeled off 8 in a row, won the whole thing after losing 2 in the SEC tourney. So, granted, I'm quite fond of the gold now. I mean, I think some doctor in New Orleans has mine hanging up in his office.
There you go.
Yeah. So those are the memories of the regional, just being really loud and a lot of intimidation from, you know, the visiting teams just not really being comfortable.
That's awesome. I can't thank you enough for your time. We'll be at the box tonight. I hope I get to see you, big guy. And thanks for sharing some memories and some thoughts on what should be a really good one. You got to see Southern Miss just waylay Arizona State. That kind of surprised me, but it is what it is, and we'll see. We'll see what happens with the Tigers tonight. So thank you, my friend.
Be a battle with all four teams. Going to be a battle for sure. But all right, Jordan, yeah. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. You take care of yourself. Southern Miss leading 12-2 now, one out, bottom of the sixth. That was Eddie Yarnell, 1996 World Series champion. Boy, he could throw it from the left-handed side. Man, he could throw it. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Hooters, you know, if you can't be at the box, you can always go to Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Sit back, eat some wings, drink a cold beverage, and watch the regional right there on the plethora of televisions that they have. Because you know what? Hooters, it's going to make you happy. It just is. We'll be right back. NBA recap, game one, finals, Raptors, big time win. We'll talk about it next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back. Game one of the NBA Finals goes by the way of the Toronto Raptors, 118-109. Pascal Siakam, the game of his life, 32 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks, 1 steal to offset Steph Curry's 34 points. It was quite a performance. We, the North, got it done. Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, talked about the game one loss to the Raptors.
Well, their defense was great, and it wasn't our best night, but we just got outplayed. So simple as that. Move on to the next one.
One of the big keys was transition. Too many fast break points. Raptors get the ball off the glass, get it and run, get numbers. Steve Kerr talked about transition defense.
And that's the game. That's the number one priority when you play Toronto. You have to take care of their transition. And we gave up 24 fast break points. We turned it over 17 times. So that's the game, really. The other stuff, you know, guys are going to make shots, miss shots. They're going to have good games. They're going to have bad games. But it's kind of the key points that you can take care of that are the most important. And we didn't take care of that transition.
The key also was the performance of Pascal Siakam. His game has just grown and grown throughout the course of the season. And his coach, Nick Nurse, stated the obvious.
Big offensive night. I thought he he played with really good composure, right? He got to his spots and got on balance and was patient. And when he needed to go quick and get around him, he did as well. And he had a couple of real tough ones go in for him as well.
He was sensational. So was Fred VanVleet. He was terrific. Already it's been ruled that Kevin Durant will miss game number 2 on Sunday night. Big question mark, Andre Iguodala. That calf muscle again looked like he sustained some injury as he took the ball into the lane and elevated to take a shot. Excuse me, but after an MRI, it appears that Iguodala is okay, and he'll be good to go in game number 2. So the left calf MRI came back clean, and they need him after he was limping down the court. Boogie Cousins played a little bit, but totally ineffective. He just can't go. It's so hard for a big that misses that much time to get back into game shape. He was just a liability on the floor. And I don't see how there's any way that he can play at this level against this type of a team. So, game 2, Sunday night, and we'll see what happens. Meanwhile, the commish, again, Drake, the supernova fan of the Raptors. He was all over it against the Milwaukee Bucks, even to the point where he went up and kind of put his hands on the shoulders of Nick Nurse, who was oblivious to it. But Drake got into it a little verbal with Draymond Green after this game. And Adam Silver talked about the entertainer/NBA superfan.
The issue for the league is that he has this ambassador-type role with the team, so he is viewed a little differently than any fan sitting there. But at the same time, I think there are appropriate lines that shouldn't be crossed in terms of how a competing team is addressed, or the officials for that matter. And as I said, I mean, league office had conversations directly with Drake and his manager, and I think we ended up in a good place.
Whatever. All right, let's get you updated on some scores. Southern Miss 12, Arizona State 2. Bottom of the 6th, 2 outs, runners at 1st and 2nd. McNeese trailing Iowa State 6-5, top of the 9th, 1 out. So the Cowboys down to their last 2 outs in game number 1. Southern University of Baton Rouge has come back to tie Mississippi State. They led 4-1. Then it was 4-4. Then State took a 6-4 lead. And now in the bottom of the 7th, Southern has tied things up with Mississippi State at 6 apiece. So there's some local flavor to the NCAA baseball tournament. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Hot topics, more talk about AD and the Pelicans. And we'll talk about a whole variety of things, including, yeah, the booze ban has been lifted in the SEC. Georgia, man, are they proud of themselves? Wait till you hear what they want to do for you to be able to buy beer or wine. That's coming up, hour number 2. The Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number 1 sports station, your source for LSU sports and the Houston Astros, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back, Friday edition. Yes, indeed.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number 2 of 2 on a Friday. It's the last day of the month of May, and we've got a lot to get to, so we're going to get busy. Booze in Tiger Stadium, beer and wine, as the SEC has lifted the ban. And you're going to be able to go in Tiger Stadium, the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, Alec Box Stadium, the tennis courts, the beach volleyball, softball, gymnastics. You know, you want it? You got it. With a couple of little stipulations, we'll get into that a little bit later. Golden State trails Toronto, one game to zip, and LSU at the Box tonight at 6 o'clock. Let's get busy. CD, time to take our walk around the water cooler. Button, please.
It's Friday. That means we get you ready for the weekend ahead with five.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Big questions headed into your weekend. Now let's get it going with your Friday 5 edition of Hot Topics.
All right, Mr. Domain, host every morning of Under the Dome from 10 to 12 right here on 103.7 The Game. All right, you're the host. I'm the guest, so fire away.
Oh, yeah, we got a lot to get to, Jordy, of course. I think we got to start off with the biggest story of them all heading into today. It is SEC beer. We're finally going to get alcohol sales be allowed at SEC games. Stadium-wide, a lot of great caveats, as you mentioned. Definitely a lot of them make sense. But, Jordy, I got to ask you, was that a no-brainer, and why haven't we gotten it sooner?
It's a no-brainer, but I'm curious as to who's going to get the contract.
Yeah.
What beer vendor, all right, and how much is it going to cost us to get a bottle of beer at a ball game? That's going to be interesting. Is that going to bring more people to games and keep them there longer? I don't think so. I really don't. The only way, I've said it till I'm blue in the face, the only way to get people into the stadiums and get them to stay there is to get great teams to come in and play you, teams that can beat you. And I just don't see that happening. So we'll see.
I think it will get a lot more people in there because, honestly, you're not going to be seeing as many people kind of get liquored up before the game. Not quite as much, Jordy. So you see a lot more people actually get into the building as opposed to, you know, tailgating. Definitely that's thrown a little bit more towards the direction of the people at Cajun Field where beer has been served for quite some time. You'd have to worry about that over there. Yeah. But it definitely is going to be interesting to see what happens with LSU especially. I think that could be something to happen down the line.
It'll be a novelty at the beginning like anything else. And then we'll see if it has lasting power. Again, how much are they going to charge you? And we'll see.
All right, Jordy, moving over. Last night, definitely a fun one last night with game one of the NBA Finals. The Raptors kind of shocking the system here. And they started off the NBA Finals 1-0 lead. Jurassic Park was on fire, Jordy. Can they keep this up?
Look, Golden State's a champion, and as Rudy Tomjanovich once said, never underestimate the heart of a champion. So they'll come back and fight. But look, Siakam played great. Marc Gasol played great. Fred VanVleet played great. It was kind of a ho-hum game for the Claw, Kawhi Leonard, and they still got the win. So Kevin Durant ruled out for game number two.
Yep.
Thank goodness Iguodala is good to go for game number two. Look, the Warriors are going to be – they've got to get better production from Klay Thompson.
They
has been disappointing.
Exactly, Jordy. That's going to be something you need to think about with the team in game two on Sunday, along with KD ruled out. I mean, the Raptors right now are strong favorites. But, of course, I think we got to talk about with the NBA Finals, and we talked about it at the end of the hour, hearing a clip from Adam Silver talking about Drake. And it got me thinking, who was a bigger nuisance courtside, Jordy? Spike Lee or what we're seeing from Drake right here, right now?
Wow. I got to say Spike Lee, I think. He was certainly there longer. This is the first time for Drake, so let's see what he can do. But nobody's gone and done the Reggie Miller choke sign to anybody. And
not yet, at least.
And Scottie Pippen saying, six your you-know-what down.
Yeah.
So I got to give Spike Lee the nod. But I thought it was pretty cool that Drake wore the Toronto Curry jersey for Del Curry back in his day with the Raptors. So you forget how many really good players played in that organization at one time or another. So good for him.
It's amazing to see what Toronto's doing, finally making it to the NBA Finals, finally cracking the glass ceiling, if you will. I mean, the first year, sans LeBron James, and now we're kind of seeing the cream rise to the top. And when you look at the Toronto Raptors, we talk about Pascal Siakam a lot.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm going to compare him, Jordy, to one player on the team he's with. That's Kawhi Leonard during the 2014 NBA Finals, because it felt like Kawhi Leonard had his shining moment and became a breakout star in that NBA Finals. Became that guy everybody started talking about.
Yeah, you know, he was playing with Duncan and Parker and Ginobili, and he was kind of like the afterthought, under-the-radar guy. And Siakam's the same way. That's a great, astute comparison there, my friend. Well done.
I appreciate
that. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
In their prime, who do you take? Marc Gasol or Pau Gasol?
Oh, Jordy, you're digging deep into my brain for this one. I'm probably going to lean towards I got to go with Marc Gasol. I think Marc Gasol definitely is a guy I'd love to see, be able to take down Pau Gasol in his prime. I think he's definitely a lot better. I feel like Paul not necessarily he was very one-dimensional in my book, the way I remember him in his prime.
I would take Mark as well. He's a better passer, better long-distance shooter. I would take a slight nod over Powell, but Powell won those championships with Kobe, so let's see what Mark can do. But not a bad brotherhood there.
Not at all, Jordy. And, you know, we've got LSU Stony Brook tonight, and I got to ask you, just in terms of the pitching battle, because I feel like LSU's got the firepower loaded up, ready to go. They definitely looked really good towards the tail end of the season. So I got to ask you, Jordy, who has the pitching edge tonight? Is it the Tigers or the Seawolves?
I think the Tigers have the pitching edge. I know it's a freshman, but, you know, you're pitching against some of the powerhouse teams in the country that he's pitched up against the last three times he's been out there. All three wins with a sub-2 ERA. I'm going to give the nod at home to Marceau with that crowd that's going to be rocking the box tonight. No question.
Oh, they're going to be rocking the box tonight, especially with the fact that potentially you have Southern Miss in your sights heading into the regional semifinal, Jordy. It feels like maybe, just maybe, you got a little bit easier road when it comes to a possible regional final, be able to try and move forward and advance. I think that'd be huge. You have LSU win tonight and then play a team like Southern Miss, whenever you've also got an ace in Eric Walker up against their guy. Their ace is going to be up on the mound as well.
Right now it's 12-2 Southern Miss over Arizona State, bottom of the seventh. So we'll see. Arkansas with a 9-2 lead in their region, and Mississippi State over Southern 9-6. CD, thank you for the five.
Thank you,
Friday.
Jordy.
Have a great one.
You
Cajun
too, man.
Chef, best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. A new guest to the program, talking Pelicans in the NBA. Next. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. Whether you need gas for your car, tobacco products, excellent fast food, or a good bottle of beer or wine, we have a large variety to choose from at ShopRite convenience stores. For those on the go, breakfast or lunch in a ShopRite store is a must. At ShopRite convenience stores, you'll find newspapers, magazines, maps, just about anything for your travel needs. So if you're anywhere in central and southern Louisiana, you'll find a ShopRite store near you. So there's no need to search any further. At all ShopRite convenience stores, you'll find just what you're looking for. We're a one-stop shop for all your needs. You really can ShopRite at ShopRite.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holter Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, the NBA Finals underway. We saw Toronto win Game 1 against the Golden State Warriors with a great defensive effort and just some incredible play by some maybe not primary players named Kawhi Leonard, but other players. And now Game 2 will be on Sunday night. But still, the talk around here is about the Pelicans and Anthony Davis. And I'm thrilled to bring in, for the first time on our program, a terrific writer for Bourbon Street Shots, Shamit Dua, kind enough to join us. Man, thank you for the time, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You know, the more I think about this thing, and I'm thinking big picture, I think the fact that Anthony Davis requested a trade in the long run will be the best thing that ever happened to this franchise, because it forced some – we got to look ourselves in the mirror, and we either got to become legitimate or we're just going to go away. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I think his trade request set off a chain of events that normally wouldn't have happened.
Yes.
Because when he requested the trade, the Pelicans were thrust into the national media, and frankly, they were being made fun of. They were viewed as a joke. People were saying that they wasted 7 years of Davis and they haven't been able to accomplish anything, and they were taking shots at the front office, the ownership, everything. And I think the top brass here did not like that perception. So they realized, hey, we have to change the way we operate to change this perception, but also in the future when we have guys like Davis, we want them to stay and not experience this.
You know, I've been around this franchise since they came over from Charlotte, and they were the Hornets. And I remember they had a core group back then of Chris Paul and David West and Tyson Chandler and Peja Stojakovic, and they were one game away from getting to the Western Conference Finals. And I'll never forget the next season, right before the trade deadline, they, to the surprise of all, traded Tyson Chandler away. And I can remember David West looking at me going, you know what, this was fun. Now I know that this is a business. And that broke that whole team down and tore it apart. So this Anthony Davis thing comes up, and it had a chance, and it basically did the same thing. That the season ended just, I mean, they tried hard, but it just wasn't going anywhere. Don't you think Griff has gone out to L.A. and said, look, and Davis said to him, look, man, I'm not coming back there. And Griff says, that's fine, but let's talk about where you want to go and where can we work out a deal where you may possibly sign a long-term deal so we can get something done for both of us. Do you sense that is the conversation going on?
Yeah, definitely. I still think it's a little bit unlikely that Davis is going to change his mind anytime soon. So I think the conversation is more about, hey, let me hear your side of the story. I wasn't here for that. Let me hear your complaints. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you about the steps we're taking to address some of those complaints. And I understand if you still want out, let's work together for a solution that benefits the both of us, because I don't want this to be a situation where it gets into the media and we drag this on and we create a toxic environment that happened in February.
Is there something, I mean, he knows Drew Holiday, and Drew's one of the more underrated players in the league. Zion Williamson certainly brings something unique and unusual with his skill set. I got to believe Griff is saying, look, we're going to surround, if you want to come back, we're going to get some shooters like I did at Cleveland, and we're going to space the floor, and things are going to open up more for you. I mean, if it's about winning, I think he can paint a picture where this team would be a lot better than they have been.
Yeah, objectively, there are very few teams in the league that have the capacity to acquire Davis and have a better long-term future than the Pelicans. And that's not even getting into the Pelicans being able to offer Davis the richest contract in NBA history. Now, that being said, you know, Davis might feel things are a little bit too far gone at this point, and you have to reconcile with the fans. You have to walk back in that locker room. You have to, you know, walk back a lot of things that have been said and done. But he did wear the "That's All, Folks" shirt at the end of the regular season. So there, it may be a bit of a tough pill to swallow.
All right. So he's one of the marquee players in the league. Some will say he's top five. He's certainly no lower than top 10 in the league. So I would imagine there's a lot of teams that want him. But what do you – and I ask everyone this question. What do you, Shamet Dua of Bourbon Street Shots, what do you want in return for this number one pick that – according to many, was wasted because they didn't put the proper talent around him? What do you want in return for him?
I want the most assets possible, and whichever team is willing to offer that, that is my goal. I know a lot of people will focus on some specifics like, oh, let's get this role player or let's get this person because they fit well. I'm not worried about the fit or anything at this point. To me, you have the single best asset in the league right now in Zion Williamson, or the number one pick. I want to accumulate as many assets as possible because you have a timeline, you know, for the next 4-7 years with Zion to figure out the fit stuff. So if you have a war chest of assets, if they don't work out in the immediate, at least you have a plan going forward in the long term. So let's say, okay, I have these things that are valued. They don't necessarily fit well together. I can flip them for other things of value that do fit together. So whichever team is willing to offer me assets, both immediate and in long term into the future, I'm talking picks in, 2022, 2023, 2024, far out to where we can build a sustainable team and a sustainable franchise going forward.
We hear the same names. We hear the Lakers because of Clutch Sports. We hear the Celtics because they've made it well known for years now they would love to have Anthony Davis. We know now that Trajan Langdon is Griff's right-hand man. He's got connections with the Brooklyn Nets. I hear the Clippers because they just want to do whatever they can to just stomp on the Lakers and just make them collapse. Are there other teams out there that you think are in play?
I think it's going to be the main ones that you talked about: Boston, Los Angeles, New York. Both New York teams, both Los Angeles teams.
Okay.
People talk about teams like the Raptors maybe getting into play or the Nuggets. I just don't see teams like that having enough assets to truly make a run at Davis. And I really think it's going to be the bigger market teams.
Who has the best assets to give, in your opinion?
I think if Boston wants to lay it bare, offer all of their future picks that they have acquired from other teams, offer all of their younger players, they have the most difficult offer to beat. But it just depends on how confident they feel in their free agency situation, because Kyrie Irving is a free agent, and there's lots of talk about him leaving Boston. If they're confident he's returning, and if they're confident that they have the ability to put basically a dynasty going forward in the East around Kyrie and Davis, I mean, you have two top 10 players right there, then I think they go all in. But it just depends on how comfortable they are with that.
I'm with you, Shemit Dua of Bourbon Street Shots. Is it good for the league or is it bad for the league that we're talking about the NBA Finals and what many believe are the two best players on their respective teams? We're talking not so much about the game itself, but what are they going to do when the season comes to an end? And that's Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. Both will be free agents yet again.
I think from a business standpoint, it's definitely good for the league. The league very much wants to be a year-round sport. And if they have compelling storylines in going into these finals with Durant, with Leonard, it's going to draw more eyeballs to the games, and then there's going to be more people tuning in after the finals are over, and they're going to be intrigued in free agency, and they're going to be intrigued by whatever teams these players go to if they leave. So I think the league is very much trying to capitalize on the attention that these players are drawing, for sure.
Well, I've said this. It seems like for the first time since New Orleans has had a basketball franchise since they came over from Charlotte, it feels like for the first time we've got some concrete under this franchise and not sand that's going away day by day by day. God bless George Shinn and all that group and all that, but it looks like for once we've got some stability and a plan and willing to spend money to make that plan work. So seems like a new beginning. So why not change everything? Why not change the uniforms? I know it would cost money, but who cares? Change the colors. Let's get a fresh. Change the music in the arena. Let's really make it a new, fresh start. Are you with me?
I'm with you on pretty much everything there. I think investing into different colors, investing into more of a localized game day experience. I mean, how many talented musicians and performers do you have in New Orleans? I'm all for that. I do understand, there are hurdles to cross when making those things happen. So, but it might be a process on getting that underway. But I'm with you there. I think that the Pelicans should truly embrace the weirdness of the city.
Yes.
Just embrace New Orleans and embrace the weirdness of the name itself. You're the Pelicans, and you're building something unique here. You have a foundation in place. You got one of the most unique players coming to you in Zion Williamson, so just go all out.
Let's have a king cake section where you can get king cake all year round. Pralines, I mean, let's soak in the flavor of our great culture and our great city and prove all those pundits wrong. I can't wait to see Zion play. I mean, seriously, he's going to pack the house.
I am counting down until days for the draft to happen. I'm counting down for summer league. It's just it's nerve wracking to me because it can't get here fast enough. he's going to be tremendous.
I'm with you, Shamit. I can't thank you enough, man. At least we're talking Pelicans. You know, we're not playing, but we're talking, and that's I think that's a good thing. And back to our original point, I think the trade request by Anthony Davis is the best thing that could have ever happened to the franchise, present and long term. And I think we're in agreement there.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it can be understated or overstated how much Gail Benson has truly committed to the franchise and how much he's invested in making sure that there's a successful vision going forward.
That's awesome. Man, enjoy the finals. By the way, you picking Toronto, or is Golden State going to come back and win three in a row?
It makes it really hard to bet against Golden State with the way they've played over the last few years. But, you know, the Durant injury might be the deciding factor. If he can come back in game three, I think Golden State still takes it away. I still think Golden State probably steals next game in Toronto, which will bring back home court advantage to their side. So it's tough for me. I would love to see Toronto win. There's no doubt about that.
It'd be great for Canada. Great for the league. It's the curse of Cousins. I'm telling you, they better sit Boogie down or they're not going to win. I'm just telling you. Shamit, thank you very much.
Just keep playing 40 minutes a night.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Enjoy it, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll do it again, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yep.
All right, buddy. You take care. Shamit Dua at Bourbon Street Shots. A lot of fun. We'll talk a little this and a little that with my buddy George Becknell. Wait till you hear what they're doing for alcohol at Georgia. Yeah, you want to go watch the Bulldogs play at Sanford Stadium and you want to drink a beer? Huh? Wait till you hear this. That's coming up next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And we're back. Oh, it's a Friday. Wouldn't it be fun without my buddy George Becknell to talk about a little of this and a little of that? Bye, George. How are you, buddy? What's been going on?
Man, I'm fantastic, Jordan. I'm excited about these finals, man. How are you?
I'm good. Before we get to the finals, I got to talk about a couple other things, man. I was riveted to the Scripps National Spelling Bee. And they had, for the first time ever, an eight-way tie. So eight kids broke the dictionary. I mean, they threw up names up there. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And these kids, one after another, it was amazing. Did you watch any of that?
Nah, Jordan, I didn't watch a lick of it, man. I didn't even know that was going on. But you brought me back to my fourth grade days when I felt like the smartest kid in the class when I could sell photosynthesis. So you kind of walked me down memory lane just now. But nah, I didn't get a chance to watch it.
I mean, they kept trying to eliminate these kids, and they couldn't do it. Each speller was given a full $50,000 cash prize in addition to the Scripps Cup. They've had co-champions before, but not eight of them. They couldn't be beat. It was absolute, and the words, George, I'd have been eliminated so quickly, it wouldn't even been close, man. They're sitting there, and they're writing the word on their hand, and they're going, tell me the origin of the word. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I don't know how you study for it, but it was incredible.
I have no idea how you study for that, but I do know there's no such thing as an eight-way tie, so they should have brought out some math problems and something to break the tie, Jordan. That can't happen.
Man, I think the only one I got right was odilic. O-D-Y-L-I-C. Anyway, it was absolutely amazing, as was, how about the defense of the Raptors? I sent you a text early on. I said the pace in the first quarter was mind-boggling to me. Back, it looked like Loyola Marymount versus Loyola Marymount, back and forth, up and down. I said, how are they going to keep this pace up?
Man, Jody, that was crazy. And I replied to that text because I thought that favored Golden State. You know, because Golden State, what they do well, they are able to shoot the ball in transition. They're able to get some wide open layups because you have to watch Clay. You have to watch Steph. But it didn't work out that way. But, you know, I was very, very impressed with the Raptors. And, you know, it's fun to watch a game where they're going up and down like that, yeah. Man, all the transition buckets. So it was a good game to watch. I enjoyed that.
Kevin Durant, now it's a luxury to have his talent, but now is it a necessity against Toronto?
No, Jordy, I don't think this is a necessity unless Andre Iguodala can't go. You know, because yeah. I thought the Warriors, the roles were reversed last night. You know, you and I have been talking throughout these playoffs, and we've kind of come to a consensus that Kawhi looked like he was the only guy on the Raptors the whole playoffs. And then once Kevin Durant got hurt, the Warriors got a lot of production from their bench. Well, it was the opposite last night, you know. The role players of the Raptors played so well. Siakam had the game of his life. Van Fleet played well. Ibaka contributed. You got Mark Gasol playing well. And on the other side, Steph had a good game. Klay had a decent game. Draymond had a good game. And that was it. You didn't get anything from Iguodala. You didn't get anything from Livingston. You text me and say he couldn't shoot because he can't.
He can't shoot. You know what it is? I'm telling you. You know what it is? It's the curse of Cousins. Boogie Cousins doesn't need to play in this game. Boogie got to go. He can't run. He is such a liability. They're trying to make him happy. I don't know why they try to make him happy, but he is a shell of his former self. He can't play. He got to sit.
Well, you got to sit him. But I think Steve Kerr was just trying to get any kind of advantage he could with Kevin Durant being out. But, yeah, man, you got to sit with you, man. And I know Iguodala isn't 100%, but he's rehearsed at this point. He's not ready to be out on the floor. You can't do that. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know why they tried to put him in, but it didn't help.
All right, game two, what do you think? Sunday. What do you think about it?
Well, we got two games, man. You got the Raptors and the Warriors, and you got Drake versus Draymond Green.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
I'm going to go ahead and take Draymond in this one, man. But the Warriors, I don't think you get that type of game from Siakam. You know, Kawhi didn't play particularly well. He had a lot of help from his supporting cast. These Warriors, man, I don't see them being that bad. I think they're going to get some production from the bench. Klay Thompson has to come up big, though, because it's obvious they want to stop Steph. Klay got to come up big, and Draymond has to continue to do Draymond. But I think the Warriors get it together. There's a reason why they've won three out of the last four. And I don't believe that the Raptors supporting cast are as good as they looked in game one.
I'm waiting for Van Fleet to come back down to earth. He has been terrific of late. I remember him at Wichita State. Never thought he'd be the player that he is now, but he is just automatic from downtown. Want to shift gears. The SEC meetings are taking place in Sandestin. The presidents, chancellors are voting on these alcohol sales. Did you see what Georgia is going to be doing for their alcohol policy for Sanford Stadium? Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready. I'm intrigued. Okay.
Georgia's planning on rolling out an option to consume alcohol in Sanford Stadium in the future. All it's going to take is a $25,000 donation over a five-year period. So Georgia will be selling beer at its football stadium this season. The only people eligible are donors who donate $25,000 over 5 years. $5,000 a year. The beer has to be consumed in a special area and cannot be brought back to their seats. 7 home games, $5,000, and you can't even drink the beer and watch the game at the same time. Are they absolutely serious? You got to be kidding me. Is that what it's come to?
I don't understand. What's the point? You know, I mean, it's clear that you're just trying to solicit donations, but I mean, you might as well just leave the beer for the tailgating, Jordy. I mean, why would you tell somebody they have to watch a game in a certain area to be able to drink a beer when you're going to have the game on the TV? You might as well watch the game at home.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. You know, that's why Georgia came down here and got rocked in Tiger Stadium. That has nothing to do with anything, but I just want to say.
But you should dig in.
It's a dumb idea.
Kick your dig in. I love it. Will Wade got all his boys back except for Naz Reid and Trey Waters, so they ought to be pretty good, I would think.
I think you have to look at them as the favorites for the SEC, man. You know, Will Wade is, you know, he has some trouble, but he's coming out of this, you know, in a good position. He's got some good players, got some great recruits, man. If you look around at the SEC, you know, Kentucky's always going to be solid at least. But I think LSU has to be the favorite in the conference. What you think?
Ooh, man. I don't know
they
yet.
They're
up there. They're up there. I don't know if they're the favorite. You know, Kentucky's still Kentucky, and they still get all these blue chippers. You know, even though Coach Cal can't keep his own son on the team, his son has entered the transfer portal. How about that?
I guess he thought being a Calipari, he was going to get some playing time. But no, brother, we got to win. We can't just
it's not Little League.
I can't just play you because you're my son.
That's right. Speaking of winning and speaking of Kentucky basketball, Anthony Davis and the Pelicans, David Griffin have met. They've opened up communication lines. They're going to continue to meet. My personal opinion is Anthony Davis has told Griff, look, I want to go. And Griff is going, okay, look, we got X amount of teams that we can deal with. You need to tell me if you're interested in signing a long-term deal at this place. If not, okay, what about this place? That's my impression of the thing. I don't think Anthony Davis is coming back. Do you?
No, I don't think he's coming back either. And I don't think the Pelicans can afford to risk that. You know, if you're going to go, obviously you're going to draft Zion, right?
Yeah.
You look at the team that you have in place, Zion and Anthony Davis, to me, they don't mesh well on the same floor. So I think you can sell Anthony Davis on staying. You have to trade him. And the value you're going to get for an Anthony Davis is going to be able to relaunch this franchise. So you have to get a small forward. Jordy, we've been saying the same thing since Baron Davis and the Hornets came to New Orleans. You have to get a small forward who can shoot the basketball and who can get to the bucket. They haven't had that since they've been here, and they have a golden opportunity to get that now. With the pieces they have, they could be a good basketball team. They might not – I'm not saying they go beat the Warriors next year or anything like that, but they got a shot to make a playoff run, in my opinion, if they get this done. So he has to leave.
Oh, I agree. I'm just curious as to what they get in return for him. But they got to get this thing done by the trade deadline, along those lines. Oh, I mean, excuse me, by the draft, I believe. Because you got to pick up draft choices, draft picks from this, along with some veteran key players. And what kind of player? So just a shooter. What team do you think would provide the most bang for the Anthony Davis buck?
Well, I like Phoenix. You know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It worked both ways. You know,
Phoenix.
We can get Booker and we can get Ayton. You know, and maybe a couple other draft picks. And then Anthony Davis could be reunited with Monty Williams. To me, it works for everybody. But you're right. It has to get done before the season, because if you drag this out through the trade deadline, his value is going to drop because people know you have to trade him. So you have to trade him now. But I like the Phoenix idea. Booker is the type of player that I'd like to see in New Orleans. So is Ayton. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. But what about you? Who do you think gives the Pelicans the most value?
Yeah. I don't know, to be honest with that. Yeah, I'm not sold on all the Celtics. I'm not sold on the Lakers for sure. I hear the Clippers. I'm not sold on the Nets. I kind of like the Ayton Booker deal. If Phoenix is crazy enough to do that, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Steve Shaw said the 7 overtime game between LSU and Texas A&M brought about some changes. And he said through it all, it was a well-officiated game. I'm not so sure about that. What do you think?
I saw some phantom pass interference calls.
Yes.
And I thought the play with Mon when he was kneeling down, okay, if you blow that dead, I get that. But, man, all those pass interference calls that we had in the last few overtimes, I thought that was ridiculous. And I don't know why, but Louisiana football, we don't get the right side of the coin when it comes to pass interference calls. I don't understand.
Here's what Shaw said.
That was not a well.
Yeah, Shaw said during his explanation that he admitted that the flag that Greedy Williams drew for pass interference on the two-point conversion in the 7th overtime was a, quote, potentially marginally missed call. Potentially marginally. I mean, you talk about walking the old fence post. I mean, what is that?
That's admitting that you're wrong, but having your officials back. Like, that private conversation had to be like, man, you blew that call, but you can't completely throw him under the bus. To me, that's what happened, because that was a phantom pass interference call. I don't understand how you throw the flag on that in that situation. You know, it was so ridiculous to where I just don't get it, you know, but I don't know. But I'm not satisfied with the explanation. That's ridiculous.
255 plays total, 14 red zone opportunities. And he said, I got to tell you, that crew worked a heck of a game. And so we'll see. That's like a fired coach is going to always support all the coaches out there. But anyway, he swore that Kellen Mond's knee was on the ground prior to the Grant Delpit interception. So a lot of questionable calls, and as Edo said, oh, it's going to be a hell of a week when the Aggies come to town, because that bad boy, that's become the rival of rivals, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, one last thing. LSU, Baton Rouge Regional, they take on Stony Brook tonight. You've got Arizona State. You got Southern Miss. Does LSU survive and get out of this regional and advance to a super regional?
Yes, they do. They lost to Vandy, who's like one of the best teams in the country. And other than that, they would have won the SEC, in my opinion. So I think they come out of this and they go to a super regional. I'm not sure if it's in Baton Rouge, but they do get out of it.
Bye, George. I hope you have a great weekend. Stay cool. And we always look forward to Fridays with you, man. It's always fun. Take care of yourself. Talk to you soon.
All right, George. Take care now.
All right, brother, you take care. That brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Frankie's got everything you need. If you come into the box and you're heading from Acadiana, stop off there. I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Everything for your travel party. Young, old, it doesn't matter. They've got it all. And that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner, man, that cheeseburger is just finger-licking good. It really is. DC's Little Capital Exxon. We're back to wrap things up on this day in sports history, and some birthday wishes coming your way next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, Welcome back, boys and girls. Again, the big story coming out of Sandestin. The SEC voted during its spring meetings today to lift the ban on selling alcoholic beverages in public areas at its athletic events. The conference's new policy, which opens up another revenue stream for its member schools, goes into effect on August the 1st. But the policy does not require schools to sell alcoholic beverages, which will be limited to beer and wine, but rather leaves the decision up to each school's discretion as to how they want to do it. So, here we go. Here we go. And we told you about Georgia and what they're doing. Anyway, the policy will limit individuals to purchasing one drink at a time. It also comes with designated stop times, such as the end of the third quarter during football games and the second half 12-minute TV timeout during men's basketball games. Women's basketball alcohol sales will end following the completion of the third quarter. Baseball at the top of the seventh inning, and softball at the top of the fifth. So beer up, baby. Beer up. Or get your Pinot Grigio, Pinot Noir, or whatever you like. Welcome to the world, Southeastern Conference. Well done. All right, let's go to our day in sports history. Oh, my God, I felt so bad for my boy. It was on this day, May 31st, the year 2018, Golden State, Cleveland, NBA Finals. On this day, J.R. Smith forgot the score, excuse me, as he got a rebound. And instead of taking it back up or getting it to LeBron James, remember, he dribbled it back toward midcourt and failed to capitalize in the final moments of regulation. The game went to overtime. The Warriors win it, and the Warriors win the NBA title soon thereafter. On this day, the J.R. blunder, May 31st, the year 2018. Ouch. I feel for you, J.R. Anyway, all right, birthday wishes. If today is your special day, man, happy birthday from all of us at 103.7 The Game and every other station under the Delta Media umbrella. Hope you have a great one. Let's see who you share it with. How about happy 33rd birthday to former Packer wide receiver Jordy Nelson. Happy 42nd birthday to actor Colin Farrell. Happy 53rd birthday to one-time supermodel actress Brooke Shields. And then happy 75th birthday to the legend, I guarantee we're going to win the Super Bowl, White Shoes, Joe Willie Namath is 75 years young today and still going strong. Happy 88th birthday. Go ahead, make my day. Clint Eastwood celebrating a birthday. So, there you go. You're in some pretty good company today. If it's your anniversary, happy, happy anniversary to you and yours. All right, so stay tuned all weekend long for the Baton Rouge Regional. Every LSU game will be broadcast here on 103.7 The Game. They play tonight at 6, first pitch at 6, pregame show at 5:30. If LSU wins, they'll do the same thing on Saturday, 6 o'clock. If they fall to the loser's bracket, they'll play at noon on Saturday and work their way up. This thing could go all the way through Monday afternoon. We hope not. We hope the Tigers wrap it up on Sunday. But we will see. We'll have every pitch for you right here on your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game. That's going to wrap things up. Hope you had a great week listening in. We certainly did. Bring it to you. Some great guests along the way. Thanks to Ryan Terrio, Eddie Yarnell, Shamit Dua, and George Becknell. Thanks to my producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain. Thanks to all of you for listening to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Hope you have a great Friday and even better weekend. Come on back Monday, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.